something we are.
Something we are.
Football is like life. You gotta push.
Fantasy football is about proving that you are better than your friends.
Hold up.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Face-Off.
I'm gonna do what's best for the team.
Where fantasy meets reality.
Pure fantasy football nirvana.
And now your hosts.
Let the games begin.
Anthony Servino and Michael Hoff.
And welcome back to the FF Face-Off. This is a fantasy football Monday reaction show from everything that happened in week one. I am your host, Anthony Servino. Follow me on Twitter at The Real NFL Guru. Follow the show at the FF Face-Off. We can be found at all of the top social media and podcast platforms. And like I said, week one is in the books. We actually had real football, meaningful football, a lot to talk about, a lot to recap and react. And with me today, one of our staff writers over at FFFaceoff.com and Patriots fan, Adam Myers. Adam, what is going on?
How's it going, Anthony? Great to be here.
I'm doing fantastic. How was your week one?
You know, it's a little tough. You get a lot of crap as a Patriots fan, but, I'm here for it, and I love the way Mac Jones played. I'm sure we'll talk about that in depth later on in the show, and yeah, it was all right. It was disappointing to lose, but a promising first game.
Hey, I feel the same way as a Cowboys fan, but tell everybody where they can find you and your work.
Yeah, so I write at FF Faceoff, and you can find me at Adam T. Myers, and I also do some occasional work for Patriots Company at FPC Pats.
That's awesome. You were saying off air you do a little bit of camera work for college football. I find that very interesting. You know, any aspect of getting in touch with this game is outstanding to me.
Yeah, that's actually something that's new to me also. I think this was the fourth production that I've been a part of. I've done two Legion baseball games, one high school basketball game, and then they jumped me up to the big leagues. I was running around down on the sideline for the Montana State game this past weekend, and I'll be doing that going forward.
Now, let's get into some of the news and injury recap. Obviously, the biggest one, Raheem Mostert, suffers a knee injury. Looks like he's going to be on injured reserve for at least the next 8 games. The 49ers were a mess yesterday. You know, not even just the 49ers, but a lot of teams we didn't hear. I don't want to discredit any of the beat writers, but a lot of things we didn't hear a single peep about, whether it's Trey Sermon being deactivated in a healthy scratch. I don't think we still have a definitive reason why. Reports about DeAndre Swift. Jamal Williams, he's going to carry the load. And they both played really well. But DeAndre Swift fantasy managers, if you bought into that report about Jamal Williams being the guy, you might have benched DeAndre Swift and left a top five fantasy performance on the bench. But what do you make of this 49ers backfield now with Raheem Mostert now out? Elijah Mitchell looked good. They have Jamichael Hasty. We have to assume that Trey Sermon's going to be active next week. This is a mess for fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I don't think heading into week two, we're going to have any real clarity. Because like you said, there's so much that's unknown right now, especially in the 49ers organization. You have the whole situation with Brandon Ayuk as well that surprised a lot of fantasy managers. I think they're playing things pretty close to the vest. They aren't going to let too much get out, and I don't think we're going to have any idea really. I mean, if you went zero RB in any of your drafts, then you might have to take a gamble and start one of those 49ers running backs, whether it's Elijah Mitchell or Jamichael Hasty. But Trey Sermon, I think, is probably going to be the guy going forward. That's the role they drafted him for, and that's what they expect him to be. But will that be next week? Will that be week 3, week 4? Who knows?
Yeah, Raheem Mostert, and the biggest issue with Mostert are obviously injuries, and right out the gate, we're looking at him missing a half a season. I believe he only played in 8 games last year as well, but this certainly opens up an opportunity for an Elijah Mitchell or a Trey Sermon or even Jamichael Hasty. Let's move to the Dallas Cowboys. Michael Gallup placed on injured reserve. He's going to miss a minimum of 3 games, but the Cowboys actually have some good news as well, activating All-Pro right guard Zach Martin off the COVID list. This is a big addition for Dallas, getting really outside of Tyron Smith, their best offensive lineman back. There were reports about play calling. Like, if you are an Ezekiel Elliott fantasy manager, don't panic. I've been telling people not to panic, and if you are panicking, I don't think this is the week to move him, because you're not going to get value. And if you are not an Ezekiel Elliott fantasy manager, go buy low. We had a report today that Dallas called, I believe, 28 running plays, and maybe I'm off on the number, but they checked out of 12 of them. So these are all good signs for Ezekiel Elliott. You know, nobody really has success going up against Tampa Bay anyway. What is your take on Ezekiel Elliott, and how do you handle him in fantasy?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. You know, if I can buy low, I'm trying to. But let me tell you what, I tried sending out a lot of different offers. And while they tell you to go buy low on Ezekiel Elliott, I don't think many people are really selling low. You have the Tampa Bay defense, which was number one against the rush in almost every statistical metric last year, and that's rough. You have Zach Martin being out, and the addition of Zach Martin is great, but you're also losing Lyle Collins, the right tackle, for 5 games for his PED suspension. So I think it's going to be a little rough early on for Ezekiel Elliott owners. And, you know, like you said, if you're gonna wait to sell him till he shows signs of the old Zeke. I think it could be a little rough early on, but late in the season, when Dallas is, you know, got their offensive line back and cohesive again, and Ezekiel Elliott's getting more into the swing of things, and Dak's more into the swing of the offense, I think it's going to be smooth sailing later on in the season. So I'm holding Ezekiel Elliott personally.
Jerry,
and buying low if I can.
Jerry Jeudy suffers a high ankle sprain. It looked a lot worse than was obviously, and a high ankle sprain is not fun, but it could have been like a Dak Prescott type of ankle injury where he's missing the entire year. Jerry Jeudy out, Cortland Sutton now back to the wide receiver one spot up, but I always kind of had them as a 1A, 1B scenario. Who are you buying into, a KJ Hamler or a Tim Patrick? Me, I like Tim Patrick more. We've seen a lot more Tim Patrick in years past, and he's played really well. Hamler dealt with injuries, but Hamler also looks good. I think he had a big drop yesterday, right? That was Hamler.
Yep. And again, with, you know, kind of like the 49ers backfield, I don't think we're going to have a whole lot of clarity. I think you're going to have to kind of shoot your shot on whichever guy you personally like, and just see how it shakes out in the coming weeks, because I don't think anyone's going to be able to tell you definitively now it's definitely Tim Patrick or it's definitely KJ Hamler. Personally, I am of the mindset that it will be Tim Patrick. We've seen it more from Patrick. He's more reliable as far as injuries go, but moving forward, it very well could be KJ Hamler, and he, you know, we haven't seen a lot of him because he was injured his rookie season, but if he stays healthy this year, Tim Patrick is not a guy that they're heavily invested in and not a guy that is a critical part of their organization moving forward. They invested a lot in the draft in KJ Hamler. So I think he's going to have every opportunity to go out there and prove it. It's just a matter of whether or not he can.
The other big injury on the offensive side of the ball yesterday, Washington football team quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick suffers the hip injury, and all offseason, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he was being touted as the savior. He's going to get Washington to the playoffs. This is a guy 38, 39 years old, journeyman quarterback for a reason. I never really bought into him. Obviously, terrific fantasy asset because of his YOLO playing style, but that YOLO playing style would ultimately cost Washington games with turnovers. But with Ryan Fitzpatrick out, the guy I really liked this offseason was Taylor Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke, I believe, threw for over 300 yards, ran for over 40 yards and a touchdown in his only NFL start, which was in the playoffs against the aforementioned Tampa Bay Buccaneers outstanding defense. Now he's going to come in. He's going to start his first regular season start Thursday night against the Giants. Am I crazy for thinking Taylor Heinicke could take this job away from Fitz?
I don't think you're crazy for that at all. Fitzpatrick is a journeyman for a reason. He's bounced around the league. He's been in and out of starting lineups and benched for younger players throughout his whole career. And if Heinicke comes out and plays like he did against an underrated Chargers defense, in my opinion, and like he did against Tampa Bay's defense, having a dual threat quarterback is where the league is moving to. And Taylor Heinicke is exactly that. The upside that he offers you with his legs and the ability to extend plays is a huge asset that the Washington football team can now capitalize on.
You know, I wrote up, I'm going off on a tangent. I wrote up a betting preview for this Thursday night game for, I do work over at the Game Day NFL. And I mentioned that, you know, the under is the play here. I like the Giants to cover. Washington is not the beat, has not beaten the Giants in five games. This is the week with Taylor Heinicke that Washington picks up their first win since, I believe, 2018 or 2019. Whatever that five-game range is.
And I'm on board with that as well. I mean, this Washington defensive front is no joke. And I would argue that the biggest weakness of the Giants team is their offensive line. Andrew Thomas, the left tackle who they drafted out of Alabama in the first round, does not look like he can play in this league. Nate Solder is another year older and another year banged up. So, I mean, your bookend tackles are arguably your biggest weakness on that team. And Chase Young, I think, is going to eat them alive.
You know, you mentioned Andrew Thomas. Who was the tackle that the Giants, I used to say he set the franchise back, Flowers? And I know he resurrected his career, I believe it was with Washington now, but that's what Andrew Thomas, if they miss on this offensive lineman, it looks like they miss, this is going to be a big-time setback.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL is moving more and more into a war of attrition, battle of the trenches. And if you don't have your offensive line right, unless you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, which Daniel Jones is not, they're going to be looking to try and simultaneously rebuild their offensive line and replace their quarterback.
Even Mahomes didn't work in the Super Bowl with that line.
Yeah, and you need draft assets to do both of those things. It's really hard to do simultaneously.
Let's start with some takeaways. Let's start with Green Bay. Let's start with New Orleans. And I was down on Jameis Winston. I was down on the Saints all off season long. And I'm not going to really back off over their showing yesterday. I still believe the Saints are in a short-term rebuild. To me, this offseason by the Packers, you know, Aaron Rodgers versus Brian Gutekunst, ego versus ego. Maybe there's a little bit of a locker room split. Whatever it was, Green Bay was not prepared to play yesterday. They were dominated in all phases. Plus, this was an away game, but it was at a neutral site. They got eaten alive at a neutral stadium, and that neutral stadium, which was a reason why I went heavy in a couple of parlays and a couple of bets on that Green Bay spread. Last year, Green Bay would have blew that game wide open like the Saints did.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is not it's indirectly attributed to Aaron Rodgers and his holdout this offseason. You had Devontae Adams and the rest of the Packers receivers who were also threatening to hold out and attend OTAs and training camp and whatnot until Aaron Rodgers was back. And you had the offensive line throwing their support behind Aaron Rodgers. So if all of these guys, the entire offseason, were only halfway in, I think that showed, and it showed huge last night.
You mentioned the Green Bay offensive line, and this was worrying me a little bit, and I think we need to be really worried about it. David Bakhtiari, starting the year, it's either on IR or PUP. They lost Corey Linsley, who's now the center for Justin Herbert. Those are two big-time losses, and I think this line could struggle until Bakhtiari comes back.
I 100% agree. Your center is your signal caller for the offensive line. He's the one calling out protections and Mike linebackers in pretty much every NFL system. If that responsibility doesn't fall to the quarterback and the quarterback center relationship, you have to be on the same page when you're calling out your protections or you're going to get your quarterback blown up.
So are we panicking on the Green Bay Packers? Is this panic mode or is it just week one? And, you know, let's see what they do this week. We're not obviously we're not going to move off of Aaron Rodgers or Devontae Adams or Aaron Jones.
No, in fantasy, you're 100% just riding this out. But long term, I don't see any reason to panic. You saw what happened to Tampa Bay last year when they went down, or in Tampa Bay when Green Bay went down there. Another game where Aaron Rodgers looked absolutely horrible, threw multiple interceptions. It blowout by, and Aaron Rodgers still came back and won MVP. This team still made it to the NFC Championship. A little nugget that I found really interesting with, like you brought up, the neutral site game. On the broadcast yesterday, the broadcasters for this game pointed out how when New Orleans was deciding where to play for this neutral site game, they picked Florida because historically, Aaron Rodgers in the state of Florida. You have the heat, you have whatever it is about the state of Florida. Aaron Rodgers has not played well there in his career. And that was a huge determining factor for the New Orleans Saints when determining where they wanted to play the neutral site game. They could have played it in Texas. They could have played it in Florida. They could have played it in some of the bigger college stadiums, and they chose Florida. So I think that a combination of the offseason, you know, mishaps, struggles, whatever you want to call it, with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers organization, coupled with the heat in Florida, I think it was just a recipe for disaster that not many people saw coming, myself included.
You know, Packers fantasy assets, whether it's Rodgers or Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, all fewer than 10 fantasy points, which is it's just mind-blowing. The whole situation is mind-blowing. Let's go to the New Orleans side. Jameis Winston looked like Aaron Rodgers, 14-20, buck 48, 5 touchdowns. We've seen that Rodgers stat line how many times in the past 15 or so years Aaron Rodgers has been in this league. Is Jameis Winston all of a sudden corrected now with Sean Payton, or is this an anomaly? Because I don't know if I'm going to quite buy in after 1 week.
I'm not buying in after 1 week. If you have a bench spot that you can burn, I don't hate picking up Jameis Winston and seeing where this goes in the future. But like I said, I don't think that anyone on that Green Bay Packers team showed up to play, the defense included. So when you're, you know, when you're Jameis Winston and you've got, you know, subpar weapons around you, they didn't ask him to do too much as far as moving the ball between the 20s. But once they got into the red zone, they were giving Jameis Winston the opportunity to make plays. And if that's the style of offense that Sean Payton and Jameis Winston are going to run this year, where you play it safe between the 20s, once you get down into the red zone, go ahead and take a couple shots, then I think Jameis Winston offers a ton of upside for fantasy managers this year.
No, there was a ton of fantasy heartbreak in this game, and it wasn't just on the Green Bay side. Even on the New Orleans side, more or less, Marquez Callaway, a ton of hype in the offseason. We saw his ADP skyrocket, and Marquez Callaway, he led all Saints wideouts in snaps, only managed 2 targets. Now, the good thing, that 2 targets, that was the most by any Saints wide receiver. Deontay Harris had 2, Chris Hogan had 2, Montgomery had 1, I believe Humphrey had 1. Adam Trautman led all Saints pass catchers with 6 targets. Juwan Johnson had a couple of targets, couple of touchdowns. Kamara only 4 targets. This is how the Saints want to win football games without Drew Brees. And I don't know how much I love this for fantasy or for Saints pass catchers.
Saints pass catchers not named Alvin Kamara and Adam Trautman, I think I'm probably out on.
What about
Adam
Juwan
Trautman?
Johnson?
I like Juwan Johnson, but as a deeper, you know, if you have a tight end get injured and you're streaming the position, he's the type of tight end that will offer you upside at the position because he's a huge red zone threat and someone that Jameis Winston and Sean Payton obviously like to go to in that zone, in that area of the field. He's a massive human being, which offers him a huge amount of upside when you're in the red zone. But if he doesn't catch those touchdown passes, if he doesn't catch a touchdown pass every week, he's not going to be your between the 20s guy. He's not going to be like Adam Trautman getting 6 targets. He has a very specified and specific role in this offense, and I don't think it offers much upside for fantasy on a week-to-week basis outside of a total shot play.
Let's move from this game. Let's go to Cincinnati, because one of the more polarizing players or a couple of more polarizing players are on the Cincinnati Bengals, one of which Joe Mixon. It seems like he's a guy everybody is always out on, and we talked about this off-air with Ja'Marr Chase. His offseason was not great, scared a lot of people off of him. ADP plummeted. Both of those players really showed up and took over that game.
Yeah, Joe Mixon was a guy who I personally was much higher on than consensus coming into this year. I think the issue that you see with a guy like Joe Mixon is that he's a huge post-hype sleeper. He had that breakout year where he was awesome for fantasy, and in the next year, everybody drafted him round one. And then he failed to live up to expectations. He underperformed on his ADP. And the next year, everybody still came back and was like, you know what? Let's give Joe Mixon another chance. The Cincinnati offense as a whole now with Joe Burrow is going to look better. And then he gets injured. And when you disappoint and underperform on your ADP in back-to-back seasons like that, the guy that always comes to mind for me is Keenan Allen. You know, Joe Mixon underperforms on his ADP, disappoints fantasy managers, and then he becomes a huge value in drafts, just like Keenan Allen did after the fluky. He tore his ACL, and then he had the ruptured kidney. And those are two fluke injuries. It's not soft tissue injuries like you see with guys like Will Fuller, where they recur year after year, and it becomes a lingering issue throughout their career. And I was snatching up Keenan Allen everywhere I could 3, 4, 5 years ago. And now Keenan Allen has returned to that point where people think of him as a wide receiver one, but for a long time you could get him in the 5th, 6th, 7th round. And I think that's what you're seeing with Joe Burrow this, or with Joe Mixon this year.
Yeah, I'm a Joe Mixon guy normally, a little bit lower on him this year because of guys like DeAndre Swift I was drafting instead. But it's nice to see Joe Mixon really live up to expectations. And Ja'Marr Chase, after the offseason he had, and then to enter week one the way he did, setting the Bengals all-time, I believe, rookie receiving record previously set by, I think, Jordan Shipley or one of the Shipleys. But Ja'Marr Chase was outstanding, and this is a really good sign because Chase could ultimately lead the Bengals in receiving. And you were paying, what, 4th, maybe 5th round capital for T. Higgins. You could get Ja'Marr Chase 6th, 7th round, late August. And if he pops as their number one wide receiver and a back end wide receiver one, or has a Justin Jefferson type season, he's going to be a league winner.
Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase, he worried me in the preseason with the drops. But ultimately, he has the rapport with Joe Burrow. You see that now at the pro level. Joe Burrow is not afraid to throw the ball to Ja'Marr Chase, even after his preseason of drops. And I think that that speaks volumes and offers a very safe floor for Ja'Marr Chase going forward. If he has the trust of Joe Burrow and that Bengals coaching staff, regardless of if he may suffer some more drops moving forward, then I agree he has the upside and the potential to be that league-winning type of guy like Justin Jefferson was over the second half of last season.
Yeah, Ja'Marr Chase, 11 more snaps than Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins both, led the Bengals receivers in that category. Joe Mixon, 54 snaps. Samaje Perine, 15. Chris Evans, people were trying to hype him up like he was going to take workload away from Joe Mixon. He didn't even see a snap. I don't even know if he was activated yesterday.
Yeah, that Bengals offense, like, I think everybody was a little bit low on him, mainly because of, like I said, disappointment in previous seasons, and then a little bit of Joe Burrow's knee injury scaring some fantasy managers off. But I'm trying to acquire them everywhere I can right now.
I was calling Cincinnati Bengal offense a poor man Cowboys offense.
Fantasy-wise. Yeah, I mean, with you know, a stud running back in Mixon and Elliott, your three elite outside receivers, not a lot of talent at the tight end position. I think the poor man's comparison is a great comparison with the major difference in what downgrades the Cincinnati offense to a poor man's offense being the offensive line.
On the other side, let's start with the wide receivers. Adam Thielen outperformed Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson still had a good day. 9 targets, 5 of 71. The big difference is Adam Thielen caught 9 of 10 for 92 and 2 scores. Adam Thielen off to a great start. It's not time to panic on Justin Jefferson. Dalvin Cook did what Dalvin Cook is expected to, but the player to key on here with Irv Smith out, Tyler Conklin, and people were clamoring, well, Herndon's going to be the guy. Herndon's not going to be the guy. Tyler Conklin dominated snaps. And even last year when Kyle Rudolph was out, Conklin played a lot alongside of Irv Smith. And even yesterday, 4 targets for 41. If there's a tight end to target in Minnesota, it's Tyler Conklin.
Tyler Conklin definitely. Chris Herndon is a guy who historically has battled injuries, and his work ethic has been called into question in the past. I think the name that really stands out to me, though, was the wide receiver three for the Vikings, who I'm trying to pull up right now. He had something along 7 targets and 71 yards, I believe.
KJ Osborne.
KJ Osborne, yes, sir. I think that he offers some upside potentially, especially if Thielen or Jefferson were to go down. The fact that Kirk Cousins was looking his way that many times is a huge vote of confidence for KJ Osborne moving forward. And he's a guy that I don't mind stashing if you're in a deeper league.
Let's move off to another game. Let's go to Pittsburgh, Buffalo, because this one, I mean, yes, for fantasy, there's a lot to talk about from an NFL perspective. I don't know if anybody at all saw this coming. Buffalo was a lot of picks to make the AFC Championship, possibly even a Super Bowl. They're off to a really slow start, and this slow start to me, and this is why I've been down on Buffalo, and I got some backlash off of it last year. They need to find a running game. And they did a little bit yesterday. You know, and whatever's going on with Zach Moss, he like Trey Sermon, a last-minute healthy scratch. Devin Singletary, 6.5 yards per carry. Why he only had 11 carries, and this was a one-possession game, you know, into the fourth quarter, they need to run the ball more. And I don't know, fantasy managers don't want to hear that, but Josh Allen, just like Dak Prescott, you cannot drop back over 50 times a game and expect to win. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, one of the biggest things that I have been saying coming into this year is, do we really know that Josh Allen is the quarterback from last season and not the previous two or three? It's not a popular opinion, and it's not one that people want to hear, but you see it all the time where guys have these anomalies of seasons where, you know, they're competing for MVPs, they're leading their teams to AFC championship games and Super Bowls, and then just never seem to string it together again moving forward. Carson Wentz is the number one guy that comes to my mind. Obviously, I think Josh Allen is more talented than Carson Wentz at this point in time. I'm out on Carson Wentz, but they both come from smaller schools, North Dakota State and Wyoming. They both have, you know, some struggles early on and then pop, and they're in conversation for MVPs, lead their teams to, you know, deep playoff runs. Carson Wentz never strung it together. What's to say that Josh Allen will?
You know, and even if you look at history and really recent history, you know, was since Patrick Mahomes had that big 50 touchdown year, hasn't come close. Then it was a Lamar Jackson. Last year it was Josh Allen. Like I have Josh Allen in a couple dynasty rosters, but in season long redraft or best ball, my big targets, I have a little bit of Mahomes, but really when I was going quarterback earlier, it was Dak and Kyler, because it always seems like there's somebody new who breaks out into that number one spot. And to me this year, it's Kyler or Dak. And I'm not down on Josh Allen. I just don't know if we're going to see that repeat performance of last season. And I think this is, again, they need to run the ball, and Buffalo should be in the business more of winning football games than putting up numbers.
Yeah, and I think you see a lot of backlash, and reasons that these organizations struggle is you give this quarterback this huge contract. The fan base wants to see him. They want to see that razzle-dazzle, Allen to Diggs, deep ball, throwing it over the mountains. That's not always the recipe to win football games.
I mean, unpopular opinion, if somebody not named Tom Brady was the quarterback of Tampa Bay last year, Leonard Fournette would have won the Super Bowl MVP. He was really the MVP of the postseason, whether anybody wants to hear it or not. Because running backs still matter, and running the football still matters in today's NFL, despite the direction the league is going and despite what analytics tell us.
And you saw that in the Patriots run to Super Bowl 53 against the Rams. Sony Michel was the postseason MVP for that team. It wasn't Tom Brady. It was Sony Michel on the defense. It still wins championships.
Now, before we go on to Pittsburgh, Gabriel Davis only played in 44 snaps, but did find the end zone. Is it only a matter of time until he emerges as a starter in 3 wide sets?
Gabriel Davis, to me, is a guy that I have targeted in Dynasty. He's one of those wide year two wide receivers that I like, along with Darnell Mooney. The biggest hurdle that I think he has to overcome is Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley still received 14 targets in that game yesterday.
Yeah.
Only converted him into 8 catches for 60 yards. So he's not a big play guy, but when you have another guy on the roster next to Stephon Diggs, like Cole Beasley, who's going to eat up that many targets, and then a very capable wide receiver 3 as currently in their offense in Emmanuel Sanders, it's going to be really hard, I think, this season for Gabriel Davis to find the field consistently and find consistent target share. But moving forward, with Cole Beasley being a little bit older, Emmanuel Sanders probably playing one of the last, if not the last season of his career, Gabriel Davis moving forward, I think, has huge opportunity in that offense opposite Stephon Diggs.
Now, on to Pittsburgh, they won the game. A lot of it is because of their defense. I am very low on Pittsburgh this season. Ben Roethlisberger, 32 attempts, 188 yards, 18 completions, and a touchdown, sacked twice. He only had a 28.6 QBR despite picking up the win. These receivers, it's going to be a mess in Pittsburgh offensively. Before the season, and I took some heat for this because I understand the narrative of Najee Harris's opportunity. He's going to get it all. But with an offensive line only returning 4 starters, a quarterback who's on the big-time decline, no sense of a deep ball in the second half, and we saw how Steelers really, after going 11-0, they lost a bunch of games and got bounced out of the playoffs. You can key and stack the box. Najee Harris, 16 for 45, only 1 reception for 4 yards. I believe Najee Harris, and this isn't about the player, it's about the situation, he is the 2021 version of Clyde Edwards-Helaire last season.
I'm not quite, and I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire still finished with 1,000 yards last year. I mean, he was still a very productive player, but he was inconsistent for fantasy.
But he was a first-round pick. That's my point.
Yes.
And so was Najee Harris this year.
Yes. Yes. And I think that Najee Harris long-term is going to have to rely on Big Ben to keep defenses honest and keep them from stacking the box, which is what you saw in this game. He wasn't able to find any running lanes. It's not a lack of talent on his part. It's not that he was missing holes or didn't show burst. He just never had the opportunity to show either of those things because the offensive line in front of him and the defense being able to force Big Ben to win these football games for the Steelers leads to a very negative game script for Najee Harris.
Let's go to one. I want to talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So let's go to the Kansas City Cleveland game. Cleveland had control of that game early until Patrick Mahomes did Patrick Mahomes things with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. And once again, I know and I like Cleveland. I still, even with all the losses in Baltimore, I still believe they win this division. This defense, the secondary in Cleveland, they made some nice additions. It hasn't come together yet. We saw, you know, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce really do what they want to do, especially down the stretch in that game yesterday. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, only 10.2 PPR points, and his ADP was at a discount compared to last year. I don't think he's it. And I'm not a Clyde Edwards-Helaire guy to begin with. I don't know if it's the talent or maybe he just doesn't fit what Kansas City wants to do.
Well, my biggest takeaway in regards to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and part of the reason I have owned 0 shares across both seasons of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is look at the NFL draft. When he was taken, what was the overall reaction of fans, of analysts,
Brian,
of everyone?
Westbrook 2.0.
Nobody expected him to go in the first round. He wasn't touted as a first round talent. It was surprising to see him be the first running back off the board. And I feel like a lot of times in a lot of those situations, most recently coming to my mind being Rashad Penny, you end up disappointed as a fantasy manager. Yeah. And go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. And the biggest takeaway for me is that Kansas City Kansas City's offense is not going to ever be built around running the ball. It's not going to ever be built around checking it down to the running back. It's a high-flying, high-scoring, throw the ball deep, let Patrick Mahomes extend plays with his legs and make plays with his legs. And I, for those reasons, I don't think we're ever going to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire truly live up to the first-round dynasty ADP, to the first-round NFL draft ADP. I think ultimately he will probably be out of Kansas City after four seasons. I think they declined to pick up his fifth-year option, and I think he latches on somewhere else where the expectations are more reasonable. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a victim of the Kansas City offense. You get drafted there, you see what Kareem Hunt can do. That's what you expect for Clyde right. Edwards-Helaire, and that's not the type of back that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is, and that's not the type of offense that Kansas City runs anymore.
You know, Tyreek Hill, 11 of 15 targets, 197 yards, touchdown. Kelce, 6 for 76 and 2. On the Cleveland, actually, the wide receiver 3 spot, Mecole Hardman outsnapped everybody else. I thought we would eventually see Byron Pringle. He barely got into the game because there was a little offseason hype on him. But this is Mecole Hardman's wide receiver 2 spot, and I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
I mean, you look at it historically last year, the fantasy finish for the Chiefs wide receiver 2 averaged like 8 points per game. Just under 8 points per game. So I don't think there's any value to be found in the Chiefs wide receiver 2. Is there upside? Sure. Is there value? I don't think so. I own 0 shares of Mecole Hardman also, and I own 0 shares of Sammy Watkins. This team runs through Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, and then the running back.
Which is not good if one of these guys goes down. Not so much Tyreek, because I think the nucleus of what makes Patrick Mahomes is Travis Kelce. I am worried if Travis Kelce ever goes down or begins to regress. I think I'm a little bit worried because they don't have much now. They drafted that tight end, Noah Gray. Maybe they develop him, but the tight end in this offense is more important than Tyreek Hill. And I love Tyreek Hill.
Agreed. 1,000,000%. As a Patriots fan, I saw it case in point with Rob Gronkowski. We could lose Julian Edelman. We could lose Wes Welker. We could lose whoever else in that offense. If we lost Rob Gronkowski, it was an entirely different team. And Tyreek Hill, if you lose Travis Kelce, you can just roll safety help over to Tyreek Hill every single play now, and they're going to force you to beat them with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Mecole Hardman. And I don't know if that's going to be good enough. Travis Kelce is such a huge portion of this offense.
Now, on the Cleveland end, we know these running backs are going to do what these running backs do with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. But like just like I was saying with Buffalo, they need to run the ball. For Cleveland, there's going to be times where Baker Mayfield has been playing good dating back to last year. This is year two with Stefanski. Yesterday, 21 of 28, 321, a pick, no touchdowns. Eventually, Baker Mayfield is going to have to make a play with his arm, and I don't know if he can do it.
And that's, I think you saw that yesterday. They jumped out to that huge lead. They were up big on the Kansas City Chiefs. And when the Chiefs hit that long bomb to Tyreek Hill to bring it back, they were down 9. They hit that long bomb to make it a one possession game again. At that point, you need your quarterback, the star of your team, the leader of your team. You need him to go out there and lead a drive and kill any momentum that the Kansas City Chiefs just got. And he wasn't able to do it. And I think that you're going to end up seeing that a lot with Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield is a competent starting quarterback in the NFL. I think he can be successful in this league, but he's never going to be the Patrick Mahomes, the Lamar Jackson, the Josh Allen that ends up making the winning play, that ends up winning the game for your team that week. It will always be somebody else, in my opinion. Whether that's Odell Beckham making a spectacular catch and Baker Mayfield indirectly getting some credit there, I just don't think it's going to be Baker Mayfield throwing to Rashard Higgins or Jarvis Landry that's going to win you weeks in the NFL. It's too low power, too mediocre of an offense.
Couldn't agree more. They need Beckham back, and they need Beckham to play like Beckham back in like 2015, 2014 with the New York Giants. Let's go to your Patriots and Miami Dolphins. We talked about off air how these teams remind us of each other personnel wise, how they control the game, how they call a game, defensive heavy. Tua and Mac Jones. I don't think Tua is ever going to be big in fantasy. Mac Jones, I think they're going to ease him in, kind of like they ease Brady and not ask him to do a lot. And win games with defense and running the ball. So I'm very optimistic on the New England Patriots. It was a tough loss, and that loss goes on Damian Harris. And the report, I believe, from Mike Reese today is Damian Harris might have peaked yesterday because that costly fumble, I don't think he gets 23 carries moving forward. And Ramondre Stevens is somebody I love and somebody I'm high on with a fumble in his own right. Does that mean we see J.J. Taylor step up? Like, how do you dissect this backfield for fantasy?
The most frustrating thing for fantasy owners always has been Bill Belichick's reluctance to give one guy the workload. And I think part of the reason that that happens so often is not necessarily because there isn't a back that's deserving of the workload. I think Damian Harris is a phenomenal running back in the NFL. You saw first play of the game, he broke off a 35-yard run. And I mean, he looked good all game. He had 23 carries for 100 yards, caught the ball once. He's a very capable running back, especially in this offense. But Bill Belichick will not tolerate fumbles. He will not tolerate turnovers. He will not tolerate stupid penalties. You saw Ramondre Stevenson come in early. Had that fumble, you very sparingly saw him the rest of the game. The one thing that I think Damian Harris has going for him is J.J. Taylor profiles as more of a scat back, pass catching back,
James kind
of
White 2.0
to James White than he is the backup to Damian Harris. I don't think you're going to see J.J. Taylor come in and tote the ball 23 times and run it between the tackles. That's not what J.J. Taylor does. That's not what James White does. As much as Bill Belichick hates the fumbles from Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris, there's not another direction for him to turn at this point for a between the tackles runner, I don't think. Does he maybe scale back Damian Harris's workload and give him 16, 17, 18 carries instead of 23, 24? I think that is a possibility, but I don't think the Damian Harris fumble offers any sort of upside moving forward for another Patriot running back. I think it just hurts Damian Harris.
I'm a Ramondre Stevenson guy. I love what he did in the preseason. I think he fits what New England wants to do. I hope he gets more of an opportunity and he didn't get his, fumble his way into the doghouse of Bill Belichick.
Yeah, Ramondre Stevenson profiles out a lot like LeGarrette Blount did, and I think he could have a LeGarrette Blount type of role in this offense. But when you fumble first, before Damian Harris does, you lose a lot of that opportunity. I think if the roles were reversed and if Damian Harris had fumbled early, I think you could have seen Damian Harris go to the bench and be in the doghouse and see Ramondre Stevenson a lot more than we did. And I think that could potentially still be an issue or a possibility going forward if Damian Harris continues to struggle with holding onto the football.
Are you satisfied on Mac Jones and how he played?
I am extremely thrilled with how Mac Jones played. There was a lot of pressure in his face. He showed great pocket awareness. He was able to move up, step out, extend plays long enough, a lot like Brady did. He's not the most athletic. He's not going to hurt you with his legs, but he's able to maneuver in the pocket, avoid pressure, and make throws when it matters. The Patriots were, I believe, 11 of 16 on third down. And they had a lot of costly penalties force him into third and long situations. And I think Mac Jones, last I saw that they were updating on the TV, was like 8 of 9 passing on third down for 6 first downs. So, I mean, when your team's hurting you, like the Patriots were hurting Mac Jones, and you lose your right tackle and Trent Cannon, and you're still able to perform and step up, and the stage doesn't look too big for you, and the pressure doesn't get to you, I'm excited to see how Mac Jones develops in this league.
On the other side, Miami, Myles Gaskin, he's one of those players, we talk about potential league winners. I like Myles Gaskin more than most. And for where you could have gotten him in fantasy drafts, There is no other running back that's going to challenge Myles Gaskin to lead this team in touches every week. It's a matter of health. Didn't have a great game. 5 receptions, 27 yards. 9 carries, 49 yards. The receptions are what's going to save him every week when he doesn't score in PPR scoring formats. I'm really in on Myles Gaskin. I can't wait to see Will Fuller come back. Mike Gesicki. Only 2 targets, completely blanked. If you drafted Mike Gesicki, you know, I know it's week one. I do think you panic.
I agree. I had Mike Gesicki across a whole lot of leagues last year. I expected him to break out. I expected him to be a safety blanket for Tua, be heavily targeted. And you saw flashes of it and you saw moments of it last season. But ultimately what you saw down the stretch was just horribly inconsistent weeks where he would go out and have these 2 targets, 1 catch for 8-yard games. And I think that's just always going to be a part of Mike Gesicki. And especially now that the Dolphins have added Jaylen Waddle and Will Fuller and still have Devontae Parker and Albert Wilson, who a lot of people are high on when he's healthy. I just don't think that there's enough targets in a Tua Tagovailoa led offense to make Mike Gesicki a relevant fantasy tight end on a week to week basis.
As we begin to wrap up, there's really 2 more games that stand out that I want to touch on. Philly-Atlanta. Philly really, like, did a number on the Atlanta Falcons. My biggest worry was, what is Matt Ryan without Julio Jones? Because historically, without Julio Jones, Matt Ryan did not produce, and he's never going to have Julio Jones again. Didn't do anything despite having Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley. I wasn't too high on the Eagles coming in. I don't know if this was, well, Philly got out to a big lead and completely, you know, disrupted Arthur Smith's game plan, because normally Arthur Smith didn't trail a lot in Tennessee. And they ran the ball and they let Ryan Tannehill pick apart the enemy secondary, where when you're playing from behind and Mike Davis is your lead running back and Mike Davis looks like a shell of himself from even last season, they really don't have much else, which tells me Wayne Gallman should be added on a lot of rosters if he's not already. Calvin Ridley, former first round pick, Kyle Pitts, for, you know, guys like Russell Gage, completely blanks. I'm a little bit panicking on Atlanta.
Atlanta is a team for me that I never try and put too much stock in. Even last year when Julio was injured, you would see some inconsistency from Calvin Ridley. So I had that already built into my projections for the Atlanta offense and for Calvin Ridley, and especially Kyle Pitts. As Kyle Pitts is a first year tight end. It's very rare to see first year tight ends produce for fantasy. Is he an excellent weapon for Matt Ryan? Do I expect him to grow into one of the best tight ends this league has ever seen? Yeah, I think that's well within the range of possibilities. But for this year, I think that Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts and Matt Ryan are going to have weeks where they're really inconsistent and you get burned by them like you did this week. And I think they're going to have weeks where everything clicks. They are hitting the deep ball. They're firing on all cylinders. And you see just absolutely bananas production where they're dropping 40 points and Calvin Ridley's catching, you know, 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. I think that that's also well within the range of possibilities. So I think you just have to kind of temper your expectation. There was a lot of growing hype and kind of this little groundswell for Atlanta to be a surprise playoff team this year. I never saw that, but I think that, you know, like it or not, that kind of weaseled its way into the back of people's minds. And so you see him come out against a team who's projected to have one of the worst records in the NFL this season in the Philadelphia Eagles and just get absolutely trounced. And I think you're going to have a lot of people panicking prematurely on Atlanta.
I think this is going to be the last year of Matt Ryan in Atlanta. Julio wasn't the first veteran they move off of. I think Matt Ryan could be next. Still a big salary cap. I think this year, Ryan's cap hit, if they moved off him, was like just over $40 million this upcoming offseason. I think that's at least cut in half. This could be the time where Atlanta cuts bait, especially if they struggle. If you're Arthur Smith, you know, I don't know if you want to start over with a new quarterback. But you know, that's for, that's for the offseason. I just have a feeling this is going to be it for Matt Ryan in Atlanta, barring a playoff appearance. But on the Philadelphia Eagles side, Jalen Hurts, you know, everybody was touting him as a runner because that's what Jalen Hurts did best last year. But I know it was an easy defense to play against, but 27 of 35, 264, three touchdowns, no picks. Another 62 yards rushing. If this is what Jalen Hurts is going to give us, I'm not going to say Lamar Jackson from his MVP year, but he's going to be a top five quarterback at worst.
And that's, he was being drafted a little higher than I would personally have liked in fantasy this year, like quarterback 9-10 range off the board. But the reason he was being drafted in that range is because you saw the flashes of a Lamar Jackson where he can win you weeks with his legs. And so a lot of fantasy managers overlooked the fact that he can also win you weeks with his arm, which he showed this week,
myself included.
And if he's able to continue to produce and throw the ball like that while having the ability to get rushing touchdowns and run naked bootlegs and, you know, things like that in this Philadelphia Eagles offense, I think this entire Philadelphia Eagles offense was slept on a little bit this year because the projection for the team overall was so low. This Philadelphia Eagles offense has Devontae Smith and Miles Sanders and Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz. I mean, the weapons around Jalen Hurts are top tier in the NFL. I mean, there aren't a lot of teams with more. Jalen Reagor was a first round pick and people write him off. He has a lot of talent around him, and that's going to provide him opportunities to produce.
Listen, I'm guilty.
You just have to take him.
I'm guilty for writing off Philly. I'm guilty, you know, Jalen Reagor included. I have question marks about Devonta Smith because historically Howie Roseman has not done well drafting early receivers, especially in the first round. If you go back to Aguilar, and Reagor didn't look the part last year. But when you talk about overall talent and if it clicks, and we did see this click, I think the – you know, Philly's going to surprise a lot of people this year. And I'm in the NFC East. I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm not looking forward to playing this team.
Yeah, I think, and I do think that to an extent we saw the ceiling for this Philadelphia Eagles offense. I don't think we're going to see them come out and do this on a consistent basis. I don't think this is their floor. But if you have the ability to come out and play like they did this week, you're going to win games in this league, especially in the NFC East.
Is there any other takeaways as we approach the 60-minute mark? Anything else that you want to talk about? Actually, we have a question in the chat from Verk34 on Twitch. Gronk or Logan Thomas? I assume for this week? He didn't put the context in, but let's assume for this week, Adam. Gronk or Logan Thomas?
I'm not sure of opponents for this
week. Tampa gets Tampa Bay is playing Atlanta, and who is the other tight end? Logan Thomas gets the New York Giants.
So, I mean, both of them are going up against teams that are struggling on defense right now. Overall, I think you have to take the consistency of Tom Brady to Rob Gronkowski, the weak Atlanta defense. The most frustrating thing for fantasy owners in Tampa Bay that I think you're going to see is you have four top tier fantasy prospects. You have Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. I think a lot of weeks you're going to see two of them produce at a level that you're happy with. Some weeks you're going to see three. I think you're very rarely going to see all four. So you're going to have some inconsistency that's built in with Rob Gronkowski, but you don't have the inconsistency at quarterback like the Washington football team and Logan Thomas does with Taylor Heineke, and the uncertainty of what that offense is going to look like, who it's going to run through. So I definitely would go Rob Gronkowski this week just because of, I think, a safer floor with the same ceiling.
I like both. Listen, both of them are in great matchups. You know, Noah Fant drops 12 and a half fantasy points on the Giants. Logan Thomas had 12 fantasy points against the Chargers. Gronk did what he did against Dallas. So, like, the matchups are there. And obviously, Goddard had 14.2 against Atlanta. So, in this situation, both tight ends had 12 and a half plus PPR points. And they're both going against defenses that gave up 12.5 PPR points.
Yeah.
If I don't know what else you're working with, but let's say, maybe you had Raheem Mostert. Or maybe you had Jerry Jeudy in the flex. You might want to consider starting both. But if I had to choose one, I'm going to go Gronk against Atlanta.
Yep, I tend to agree. But I think Logan Thomas or Rob Gronkowski, whoever you don't start at tight end, does offer some flex upside.
We have,
depending on your roster composition.
Giacomo on Twitch, he has a question. His team is up by 2 points. And his opponent has no more players going, so he already won. Should he start Josh Jacobs or keep him on the bench to secure the win? He does not want to risk him losing points or getting injured. Injury is not going to give you negative points, but I guess if there's any negative points from that, so he's worried about that. What does he do? He said, because points could be a factor when seeing the teams that make the playoffs. So that's a dilemma. I don't think Josh Jacobs is going to give you negative points. I think you put him in.
I agree. Like you said, with, points four being a tiebreaker potentially for the playoffs, I don't know if his league offers any sort of upside for the highest weekly scoring team. But just in general, I'm not a fan of benching players.
Likewise.
In tight matchups. You know, you roll him out there. If he goes out there and, even if he, gets one rush, picks up 2 yards, fumbles the ball, and they pull him from the game because he was actually just, I got a sleeper notification while we were here. He was re-added to the injury report with his illness. So even if he doesn't go out there and play a lot, and let's say, first carry of the game, he picks up 3 yards, loses a fumble, and is pulled from the game, you're still not losing this matchup because that's only negative 1.7 points. Something would have to go terribly, terribly wrong for Josh Jacobs to score you more than negative 2 points. So just roll him out there. It's the right thing to do.
I agree. And I don't see Josh Jacobs going in a negative anyway. And,
I don't either.
And what if there's a situation, let's say Josh Jacobs gets you 5 points and you need those 5 points to get you into the playoffs or a tiebreaker for first overall place, then you're going to kick yourself for sitting him in week one.
1,000,000%. You roll him out.
But yeah, that will do it, Adam. This was great. Tell everybody where they can find you once again.
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Adam T. Myers, writing content for the FF Faceoff and for, full press coverage, for the Patriots.
Absolutely, guys. This was outstanding. Our first regular season Monday reaction show of the year. Every Monday we will be doing this, but tomorrow, Tuesday, Frank Amarante will be with me. We will talk waiver wire. We will talk injury updates and maybe a little bit of Thursday night football. But until then, enjoy your Monday night football matchup tonight between the Ravens and the Raiders. Good luck if you have anybody going that could decide your fantasy matchup. But until tomorrow, you guys have a good night and be safe.